This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 443 for November 29 of 2018, Jeep Gladiator steps into the arena. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Welcome, everybody, to Autoline After Hours at the L.A. Auto Show. And if it's L.A., we've got to have Scott Tallon, Jeep Marketing Director, and we've got to have Mark Allen, the head of Jeep Design, on the show. And, of course, with every show, we got to have Gary Vasilash.
And it's deja vu all over again with these two guys here in
like
L.A.
a year ago.
Yeah. Seems like only yesterday.
It does.
That's right.
And so last year, you guys had the Wrangler.
Yes.
You got something new this year?
Not really much to speak of.
No?
No. Okay, we're here to talk about the Gladiator.
Yeah.
This must have been the toughest design job in the world to put a bed on the back of a Wrangler.
It was really that easy. Yeah. Did it in an afternoon.
Yeah. Over lunch.
It's way more than that.
No, I know it is. I say that facetiously.
I know you do.
So tell us about it. What'd you have to do from a design standpoint?
Well, for design, managing the volumes of this was a bit tricky, because really on a Wrangler, our front wheel is so far forward for our great approach angle off-road, it makes the wheelbase extremely long. This is what I would call a hydraulic design. We started with the front seat, back seat, same as the four-door Wrangler, but that's where it stops. You can't get that rear wheel any farther forward. It runs into the cab. So the wheel placement, back seat, wheel placement, spare tire, trailer hitch, that's it. You can't take a millimeter out of that length. Box is 5 feet, 6.5 with the tailgate down. So we put the bikes in the back to show you kind of a scaling element. But that's our ideal, right? Toys in the back, ready to go. But managing that, and then we did some tricks to sort of hide some of that. What people are surprised with the truck, as the roof comes off, the doors come off, the windshield goes down, all that really cool Jeep stuff that we like to talk about, but that's the surprise. That and the towing capacity. It's a real truck.
Whoa. So give us the towing capacity.
7,650. Yeah. So that's best in class.
7,650 pounds of towing capability.
Did that because it gets its own unique chassis, unique rear suspension. 1,600 is the payload on it. So best in class on all these numbers. Four-wheel drive, always. V6 gas, manual trans still available, or an 8-speed automatic, and a 3-liter diesel with an 8-speed is coming.
All right, so you said best in class.
What's the class? Right?
It's the midsize pickup class. So, you know, a lot of new entries coming into that segment, one of the fastest growing segments currently in the industry, double-digit growth this year. So the timing, quite frankly, couldn't be much better to bring this truck to market. But it's a tough class. It's very competitive. But, you know, when we set out to design, develop, and bring this truck to market, we knew that, you know, truck first and foremost, right? So we had to design those truck attributes that the truck customer really buys it for. They need that space in the back of the vehicle for a reason. So we want to make sure we had ample space, the towing, the hauling, the capability, and then the Jeepness came along with it, too. So that's where the magic happens in Mark's world and the engineering, everything gets blended together to where we retain all the truck pieces that are really important, but we bring in the Jeep elements and you retain all of that, too. And then you've got the capability aspect.
What took so long to do it? I mean, I wish I had a dollar for every time somebody said, gosh, why can't I get a Jeep pickup? Was it fear of stealing sales from the Ram, or why did it take so long?
No, corporate espionage, I think. Yeah. Exactly.
Those guys.
Mark couldn't draw one. Maybe I don't know.
It was over lunch.
Mark tried over and over.
Yeah.
No, I think that you know, over the last several years, you've seen that we've really revamped the entire portfolio. So we have a full line of world-class SUVs, all the way from the Renegade, which was a new entry in a new segment that really didn't even exist a few years ago, to, you know, the all-new Compass, the Wrangler last year. So we were really focused on our core product, our core customers, and then it gives us the opportunity to start looking outside of the segments that we play in. So, of course, we look to the past, and, you know, we have a strong history with trucks.
I was amazed at that history. I remember the Scrambler. Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't realize it went way back, to the 40s.
47.
Yes, absolutely. Remember, the midsize pickup truck segment went off a cliff and died. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Everybody had one, and then they vanished.
Yeah.
And they're coming
except
back.
Except for the Toyota Tacoma. Toyota stuck with it.
Yes,
and that's
they
why
did.
They dominate the segment.
Nissan's barely there, right? But Ranger's coming back. GM's back into it.
Right.
We like that we've got a really different answer. We have a Jeep answer to the equation. So
I mean, the thing that strikes me about this is that, you know, first of all, as John said, I mean, the fact that you guys had a pickup truck in 47, then you had the FC from 57 to 65. There was a Gladiator from 63 to 87, CJH Scrambler from 81 to 82.
Okay.
Is that wrong, right? And then a Comanche from 86 to 92. Okay. Right. Now, As you look at some of the images of those vehicles, some of them looked like they could be a normal midsize pickup and not necessarily Jeepy. I mean, you guys even showed the picture of the Honcho that had like a 27-bar grill.
Yes.
And,
22, I think.
22, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
who's counting?
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, this thing looks like a bitchin' Jeep.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is.
Yeah.
So,
high compliment.
So is I mean, was that part of the strategy? I mean, is that what you want people to look at? I mean, because when you say, I mean, look, nobody's going to say, should I buy a Colorado or that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a big part of the equation. I mean, if you didn't know the LA Auto Show was taking place right now and you were standing on the street and you saw the Gladiator drive by, you would know instantly go, that was a Jeep. What was that Jeep? That's important. That's key. I mean, that's part of the overall brand identity, and that applies to all of our models, quite frankly. And this one, it makes it a little bit easier because obviously it resembles what's really the icon of the brand, the Wrangler. But yeah, that's absolutely a very important component. But I think there's a functional aspect to it too that Mark talked about, the Jeepness, the off-road capability, to be able to fold the windshield down, take the top off. You know, all those ingredients together, packaged together, give it not only the design but the functionality that really separates it from anything else in this segment.
Why the name Gladiator? I mean, you could have gone with Scrambler, you could have gone with Comanche. Mm-hmm. This must have been a huge area of discussion in the company, how to name
not
it.
Not even huge.
Not even?
No, it was about a 30-second conversation. Mark and I, and
it was a lengthy process. It started months ago. We were all involved. We all have opinions, strong opinions, and varying opinions too. And then ultimately, you know, we have to come to a point where a decision has to be made. We had fun debates, spirited debates, and it was broad reaching. There was a lot of input, but you know, we always look to the history as inspiration, not only for the vehicles, but the naming as well.
Well, you know, we talked about the earlier ones, and they all had different names. So this is completely different from them. I guess it makes sense to put a new name on it.
Gladiator was the full-size, heavy-duty truck, though. And oddly enough, we found this out because I didn't know this, and I know a lot about Jeep, but it was never badged Gladiator, that truck. It said like you had to open the door and look on the doorpost, said Gladiator, and of course in the press materials and the advertising, but never on the truck did it say Gladiator.
Well, see, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't remember the name Gladiator from back then at all.
And it came and then it went away. They dropped it, and then later on it was just J10, J20, that kind of a thing. So it's alphanumeric. But and we're not going to go there. We're going to put names on the vehicles. Gladiator, It came about, though, we wanted it to just signify the real truck. Scrambler was kind of a play truck, and the Comanche, which was honestly my favorite, but it was a much smaller, lighter-duty truck. So Gladiator was full man, right? So, yeah, full beast.
So the 5-foot bed, was that something that you thought worked best for the design, or is it something that you thought worked best for the market?
I'd say the market, first. I mean, we have to look at the customer. Who is the competition? What does the segment look like? And there's a lot that goes into that. And just works with the proportions of the truck. Obviously, we had to go to great lengths to extend the wheelbase and get the overall proportions right. But the 5-foot bed is the right size bed for this segment. I mean, that is the standard. We had to meet that standard. I mean, 4'9", that wasn't going to be acceptable.
Yeah, what about 7-foot? Will there be options down the road, maybe?
Well, that's...
Not at the moment.
Okay.
We were trying to keep the exterior proportions as trim as possible, but like I said, it's almost hydraulic. You can't get it any less than that. Crew cab, 5-foot bed.
So I'm sitting here, and directly across there is a Ram pickup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you pick up any tips or cues from your friends in the Ram studio?
I worked on Ram trucks for many years. So I know a thing or two about making a truck, but this was, we weren't even thinking about the Ram when we were doing
no?
this. No? Completely different animals. Yeah.
I got to believe this is going to be a different buyer, in fact, than what would buy the Ram.
I'll tell you what, this product, more than anything I've ever worked on in my life, is not a product of our planning department coming to us and saying, we need to fill this segment. This is people writing letters, crabbing to us, shouting, yelling, I want a Jeep pickup truck. That's absolutely true.
100%.
This is customer driven. This is not us sitting there thinking we need to.
All right, what's the next? Yeah,
absolutely not.
You guys are kind of like Porsche.
It would have been a Ram.
You're kind of like Porsche in a way. Mm-hmm. It's so clear what the Jeep buyer, who the Jeep buyer is, and what they want. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys can keep a laser-like focus on that, where other brands that are trying to appeal to a broader audience or something like that get kind of mushy.
Well, we have enthusiasts, right? We have enthusiasts, and we'll always satisfy them first and then let the rest go. It makes sense to do that. That's absolutely true, right?
If we
ignore them, the pitchforks and torches, right? Mm. Absolutely.
So, 31 inches longer frame rails than the Wrangler. It looks like you did some things, especially in the back, that change up the whole persona of what one might think a Wrangler would be like.
Well, it's not a Wrangler, and it's not a Wrangler frame. It's its own unique frame, but again, managing those proportions was tough. Some of the things we did on the box, I'll tell you, I'm not a fan of, and it's all styling driven, is raising the side of the box higher and higher and higher. We did this little trick, as you know, I can reach over, I'm 5'11", I can reach over the box and put my hand flat on the floor. And it's like, why would I do a cargo box if I can't reach the cargo in the box?
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. We did heavy duty tie downs in there. There's a lot of great pieces inside the box to make it functional. I can haul 4x8 material in this. There's a midpoint on the tailgate and a way to haul pieces of plywood, drywall, and stuff like that. So it can function as a real truck, but we're not going to show it full of rocks and mulch and stuff like that. It's going to be motorcycles and kayaks and stuff.
So you have a steel bed, but a lot of the body panels are made out of aluminum, so you can take them off?
The bed is steel. The tailgate's aluminum. Not to take the panels off, but it's just you do the equation.
I mean, the doors?
Yeah.
Yes, the doors. The hood, front fenders, all four doors, and the tailgate and the windshield frame are all aluminum. The box is steel, though.
And no other midsize pickup is going to be able to do that. I mean, that's really sets this apart from anything else that's out there.
No question.
Absolutely. I honestly wasn't a fan of it with all the panels and stuff off. I just thought it looked maybe like a weird airport service vehicle. I've become a convert. I'm like really thinking this is such a unique looking thing.
Well, you know, we talked earlier about everybody that's coming into the segment. We didn't mention Hyundai, which is looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
Volkswagen is interested. Yes. Mercedes is, you know, poking around.
Yeah.
No one's going to have anything like this. So, I mean, that almost kind of protects you guys.
The intention is clear with it.
Yeah. There's no question. I mean, you can reinvent the same thing that's currently in the market and take it more upscale, downscale, but you can't take the roof off.
Yeah. Scott, do you see this increasing the appeal of Jeep brand, or is this going to be a vehicle that is for Jeep loyalists who might say, you know, I've been waiting for something, and now I'll buy a new one?
I think it's going to do both, not just the play it down the middle, but I think that, you know, what we've seen is when we've introduced new models, you know, the Renegade is probably a good example. It's the entry point into the Jeep brand, and we've seen that those customers that have owned Renegades, they've returned and they've moved up to a Compass or a Wrangler or a Grand Cherokee. I think the pickup truck, the same phenomenon, it's going to bring in a new customer that needs a pickup truck for what a pickup truck can do, but again, the uniqueness is going to draw that extra attention. But then you have the current Jeep owner base that says, no, I need a pickup truck now, or it would be nice to have a pickup truck, but I still get to keep all the cool Wrangler attributes. So you got the loyalty play, and then you've got the new customers that'll bring in, and then they'll mix and mingle, and they'll rotate around the brand, and that's the beauty of it, is mm-hmm. once they get in, they're part of the family, they're part of the community, they're brought in, and they're part of the process. Like Mark said, I mean, this is, you know, this is as a result of our owners, our fans, our followers. I mean, it's all that feedback and input that we get that really drives us every single day.
Did I see something different on the interior? You know, I was at the unveil earlier today when you guys brought it out on stage and all. And I thought there was a picture of one of the instrument panels that had stitched leather on it that I don't ever remember seeing on the Wrangler. Have I missed that, or is there something new on the Gladiator?
You weren't paying attention when we showed you the Jeep last year. On the Wrangler and on the new Overland version of the Gladiator, you can get a stitched panel in there. Because we know there's room, we can go up with the vehicle. So that's, you'll watch this space, I guess.
Okay, but and that's available on the Wrangler?
Yes, absolutely, okay. On the Sahara.
Gotcha. I just haven't driven one of those yet, no. I guess.
We'll wait
till the spring when the weather's nice and you drive doors off.
So you guys made a nice container for holding the bolts that when people take bolts off, and you have petroglyphs on the inside?
We have OCD.
Did you design them, petroglyphs?
They're just like little, what you're referring to, are little cartoons. Say, when I take the bolts off to remove the doors, there's a little cartoon of the door, and I can organize the bolts, because otherwise they end up rolling around in the back in a coffee can. We took care of our OCD customers.
Uh-huh.
Under seat storage, there is a kind of a locker. It's a removable thing. Number one thing asked for by our customers was lockable storage under the seat back there. Because you can take the roof off or the doors, you want to be able to lock stuff up. And it goes all the way across the truck. It's weather resistant, can be removed from the truck and locked, like I said. Can haul long items, baseball bats, fishing gear, I would say hunting equipment. But to keep it out of sight and locked away.
You also have a removable Bluetooth speaker.
We do.
That's kind of cool. So talk a bit about that.
I mean, that's part of the lifestyle, right? And when people are going to the beach or they're going camping, and they've got the truck, the bike's in the back, and guess what? I mean, when you go to the beach, you can take your music with you. So it's always nice. You think, hey, everyone has Bluetooth speakers, but when you need it, you go, nope, it's not charged. I can't find the cord. Oh, I have left it at home. No, it's always equipped. It's always charged. It's always ready to go. So you take it where you want to go.
Now, I've got a number of Bluetooth speakers, and they're these little puny things.
Yeah,
this thing looks like a big, small briefcase that you could drop kick.
It's automotive grade, if you will, Jeep automotive grade, and it is really tough. And, you know, Mark's right, it's those important components about the storage, and even behind the seat we have lockable storage. So if the top is completely off, like you see here, you can take valuables because you're at the beach, you don't want the top on, leave it at home. You've got lockable storage behind the rear seats, too. So the key right there, lock the storage so everything can be safe.
So Mark said Jeep pickup diesel, like three.
That's all we got to say.
That's all
we
got to say. Okay.
Away, right.
So tell us about the diesel and what's the strategy behind the midsize truck with a diesel engine?
I think that the diesel customers they appreciate what a diesel does for the power, the performance, and the towing. They love the torque of it, right? And you know, there is a cult following of diesel enthusiasts that just seem to be always in the marketplace, and they're always asking us about when are you going to put a diesel in the Wrangler? When are you going to put a diesel? And you know, we've had the 3-liter EcoDiesel and the Grand Cherokee for a few years now. Again, very popular in certain parts of the country, more popular than others. But those customers, they really seek that out. So I think that the diesel is going to have a lot of appeal. Just the power, the performance, the fuel economy that it has. It's a different buyer. They get it. They understand what the diesel brings. And I think it's that 3-liter is nothing short of world class with 442 pound feet of torque. It's is quite the monster.
Monster torque, yeah.
So does that help in the off-roading?
Absolutely.
You and I did a little off-roading.
Yeah,
and
low-end torque.
It was not a pleasant experience, but...
No, you didn't like it, did you?
But,
oh, well. No, low-end torque, that's what they're after. Or this is going to have such great cargo capacity. The Overland crowd is going to go bananas for the diesel, and that's a growing segment in off-road. So I think there's a lot of several different avenues for that.
When does this go on sale?
So not too long, Q2 of next year.
Okay.
We're a matter of months away.
And you probably haven't announced anything with pricing?
No, not yet. No pricing announcement yet.
Okay. And how many
closer
trims?
To launch. We have three trims total. So the base configuration will be the Sport, and it's a regular, relatively basic vehicle. You'll notice that they have the black fender flares and the black soft top and black hard top. Then we have the Overland, which we have right here behind us, body color flares, available body color hard top, leather interior, and of course the Rubicon. I mean, that's the icon of the Wrangler, you know, family, if you will, and you got the high fender flares, the 33-inch tires, and that's the model lineup. So we think that you've got a really good, strong base package, a premium upscale, and then something that's built with just that extra level of capability in it.
You're going to play around more with colors, too?
The color palette's always fun, yes. I mean, that's sort of the fun. I mean, that's...
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's not just going to be... Black, white, and gray.
Oh, God, that's not us.
No. Well, there's orange.
We have orange there.
Pumpkin.
We have
punk. Oh, punk.
Yeah. Punk. Pumpkin.
Oh.
Pumpkin.
Ooh. So we'll do the cartoon colors that we do on Wrangler, and then you see the other colors, this gray. We've got this tan. I call it our vinyl siding collection, but more muted
and
colors.
There's something over here. Maybe that's a Wrangler, it's a Wrangler.
That's a custom
build.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's
so
a unique
some
color.
Sort of aqua color that you're not doing that.
We do have a color coming on Wrangler Bikini, which is a blue green, which I think is going to be pretty exciting.
It's pretty close, yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Named after the atoll.
Where they dropped the atom bomb.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Wow.
Not just once.
Yeah. So do Wrangler and now presumably Gladiator buyers, they're more open to brighter colors, because you know when you go out on the street, everything's black, white, gray.
Mm-hmm. And we predominantly black, white, gray. We have three different grays we sell on Wrangler, right? Three. They're very picky, and they go both ways. They go, I want all bright colors, bright yellow, bright green, or I want it really muted. Can't satisfy them all with one single thought on color palette, so we kind of do two, right? But the mainstays are definitely black, red, white, gray, or silver, actually. Yeah.
And will the Gladiator be built in the same plant as the Wrangler?
No, it's built in the Toledo South plant. So the Toledo North is where the JL Wrangler is built today. So Toledo South is where the Gladiator. So
interesting.
It's
next door neighbors.
One building, but
they're still connected.
Yeah, connected.
We have
two different lines
in there. Yes,
but it's got to come from Toledo. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's trail rated.
Absolutely.
All of them are trail rated.
Jesus.
Yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Gosh.
Damn you, Veselash. Of course it's trail rated.
Yeah. That's an important point. All Gladiators, just like Wranglers, they're all four-wheel drive. There's no two-wheel drive variant. So that's part of our deal. That's who we are.
And then you guys are by no means out of product. You've got a couple more coming, right? I know you probably don't want to talk a whole lot about it, but... You know, the company has certainly talked about the Wagoneer, so there's even more. We're going to be here next year talking about another Jeep.
We're going to go up and we're going to go down. I think we're just going to keep filling out the line. Jeep is on fire for us right now. There's a lot of product coming, and then we're going to be into an area of refreshing a lot of stuff and renewing products. So I got a lot of work ahead of me.
Will this be a global vehicle? Will you sell this in other markets?
Yeah, it will be sold globally, primarily the NAFTA market, but select markets globally, yeah.
Where else would it work?
Some of the Middle Eastern markets. It absolutely will work there. South America, we have some specific needs and nuances there that we can fill this little gap with. But that's primarily NAFTA. It's very NAFTA-centric, though.
But I mean, aren't you USMCA-centric?
Yes. Thank you.
aren't there Jeep loyalists the world over who are like, I want one of those?
Yeah, I think that applies to the Wrangler, and it certainly will apply to the Gladiator. Is it right for the marketplace? Does it make sense for what they need and want and what they expect? I mean, I think when you see it in person, the first thing you realize, you go, wow, it's bigger than I thought it was, right? And the proportions, it's got that presence to it. We'll meet those market needs the best we can.
I mean, because it almost seems to me that this is just like the right size for Europe. Okay, they don't need a full. They don't need a Ram 1500. I mean, something about this size is as big as they can get. I'm not saying it's compact in any way, shape, or form, but it's got.
If only Europe were really that easy to figure out.
Yeah, right. No, but that's not going to be our primary focus necessarily. No.
How do you guys protect yourselves in the sense that Jeep has had the Jeep segment, if you will, to itself? Mm-hmm. No one has stepped into the fray to take you guys on.
Not yet,
yeah. But it's coming. Yeah. Ford's coming back with the Bronco.
Yes.
GM's bringing the Blazer back. There are others that are targeted because you guys have been such a phenomenal growth story. Mm-hmm. And this is an industry that just seeks out what others are doing that's successful, and everybody piles on. How do you protect yourselves?
Never lifting. I don't know. Wrangler was a good salvo into that, because everything in our portfolio, Wrangler is the nucleus. That is the center of our world right there. We got to get that vehicle right. Grand Cherokee is a really important vehicle for us. So, well, you'll see us expand. So off-road, we're known for a few good things off-road. You'll see us expand into high-speed off-road. You'll see us expand in other ways for Jeep. The truck is going to be a big help for us. To get people think of us as other than just SUVs. So I can't comment too much beyond that, but we know there's competition coming.
So did you think about the Ranger when this vehicle was being developed and said, let's get this out there? And
We were aware of it.
We were aware of it, but we didn't know exactly what a U.S. spec Ranger was going to be. We had virtually no information like everyone else did, and we just really, to Mark's point, we stay the course. We have got to stay the course. We have the product, the brand, the messaging, all that DNA is consistent across everything we do, and we can't waver. We have a swim lane. We're going to stay in it, and if others want in it, we're going to stay in our lane. Doesn't mean we can't go into new segments, but we're going to do it the way Jeep's going to do it.
We also have a new brand lead, Tim Kaniskis, who is he's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think a lot of good things are going to happen with Jeep in the next few years, so hang on.
Real good. Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap this up.
Awesome.
Scott Tallon, Mark Allen, been awesome having you guys on. I love hearing the Jeep story.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a positive one.
Yeah.
It's
great. Yeah.
All right, so you promise next year you'll have another thing that we can sit here and do?
You make that promise.
We'll see you here next year.
Perfect. Thank you.
We'll be here.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks,
awesome.
Guys.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break right now. We got a lot more to talk about of what's going on here at the LA Auto Show, plus the automotive industry. But first, a shout out to our good friends at Bridgestone and Lear.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
We're back here at the LA Auto Show, and for the second half of the program, we've got two other people joining us. Eric Noble, who is a professor at the Art Center School of Design. Did I get that right?
We're close.
Okay.
The professor part I'll take, although I still suffer from imposter syndrome. But we're Art Center College of Design.
Okay, but you teach there.
Whether I teach or not, I'm faculty.
Okay.
Yeah, yes.
And also joining us is Lauren Fix, who is the car coach, also the president of the North American Car and Truck and Utility of the Year Award. And great having the both of you join us for the show.
Thank you.
Okay, now, you guys may not know, but always coming out of the break for AutoLine After Hours, Dr. Data makes an appearance. Dr. Data, a.k.a. Gary Vasilash, always regales us with some numbers. He throws numbers at us, and we got to figure out...
And you got to figure out what the numbers are.
And you got to figure out what the numbers mean.
Yes.
We got to figure this out.
Okay.
And sometimes it's easy breezy, and other times we're like, Gary, what the heck does this mean?
All right, so this one's very easy. So we're in Los Angeles, right? And we've just been talking about a pickup truck. Okay. So we will
show
you.
There are some of those around.
So we'll show you these numbers. So the number of light trucks sold in L.A. Orange County through June, was it 147,847?
June.
251. Well, because
No, that's fair. I'm not correcting. I'm just, I'm noodling already.
Or 251,432 or 307,661. Okay, so this is from January to June.
In Orange County only.
And L.A. County and Orange County in total. Okay, so
where do you get these numbers?
So we're in L.A.?
Indeed.
Yeah, you'd think just, auto shows were organized by car dealer associations.
What a concept.
So, what do you think?
Wow.
Well, I'll go first. Okay. I'm going to go with the low number, 174,000.
Okay. Eric?
I'll cut the baby down the middle. If I had time to do the math, I'd say that California is probably about 10% of the pickup truck market, but I don't know what percent Orange County, L.A. are, so I'll take quarter of a million.
So I guess it leaves me with 307,000.
You can agree with John. You can,
or Eric,
yeah.
In fact, it's probably politically a good idea to agree with John.
No, actually, I think it's closer to 251,000. 251.
So this is just, okay, so.
There's a lot of working people here, you know.
That is true. Okay, so just so you know, the answer is...
Good job, John.
Okay.
It's still a lot of trucks.
But so these numbers actually have... There's another meaning to this. I just didn't randomly...
Wait a minute.
I thought I was doing nothing at night.
What you're saying is that blue states buy pickups?
Seems like.
Yeah,
well,
lots.
At least L.A. Orange, County does. So think about that. So it just turns out that the... So we have the number for the light trucks in L.A. County and Orange County. 166 is the number, but 160, look at this. So there is actually more cars sold in L.A. Orange County than there are total vehicles sold in San Francisco.
Well, because San Francisco's on a car diet. Didn't you hear that?
No, tell us about this, Lauren.
Oh, yeah, they want to cut down parking. They want to make everyone do mass transportation, even if it's unavailable. They're trying to make everyone go electric vehicles. That's their mind. So
they are, but to be fair, it's never been a car city.
Well, to be fair, L.A.'s got way more population.
Yeah,
that's true.
San Francisco's quite small. San Francisco proper is 800,000 people and about 8 square miles.
Right.
And they're famous for trolleys for a reason.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Ricearoni.
And parking's always a challenge there anyhow.
Not a car city.
Right. Speaking of this, and you mentioned this, John, that Lauren, the North American International Car Truck Utility of the Year president, so today at the show, the finalists were announced. Why don't you quickly tell us what these finalists are?
We'll start with the obvious ones, the trucks.
Yeah.
There's
always three finalists. And in the truck category, there were how many trucks in the category? Three.
So I'm going to save the best for last.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so the truck is the Ram 1500, the Chevy Silverado 1500, and the GMC 1500.
The Sierra. Okay.
So that's your final three. So we'll go to the utilities next.
Yeah, okay.
And there was a whole bunch of utilities, and there were a whole bunch of...
I was actually surprised who the finalists were.
Me too.
Two I guessed. Obvious. The third one I was surprised. Obviously, Jaguar I-Pace. That was kind of like, once you drove it and saw the design, and you would appreciate that.
Yeah, lovely.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Acura RDX. We kind of figured that would be somewhere in the mix.
The most important product probably for them in an awfully long time. And good.
And they've never won, so that could be, neither is Jaguar. And the third one is the Hyundai Kona and Kona EV. I was surprised. I thought it was going to either be Lincoln Nautilus or it was going to be...
How about Jeep Wrangler? I'm stunned that didn't make the list. And Gary and I are fans of the Hyundai Santa Fe.
Even the Cadillac XT4 is great.
Yeah.
But I was really surprised. Mm-hmm. So the car category, the obvious one to me was the Genesis G70. It was kind of like, duh, it's that good. It is a game changer. The Volvo S60 and V60, which is the wagon and the sedan.
SNV.
Well, it's in the same platform, just different body. And the one I was surprised, the Honda Insight. I didn't expect
So this is a hybrid vehicle.
Yeah, but I'm thinking to myself, why wasn't like the Avalon or the Corolla was awesome?
I'm so glad you said
awesome.
That.
Awesome.
I love the Corolla. I'm not a huge fan of it, and I know you got different opinions, and we got to get into that too. But from an engineering standpoint, that thing is really well done. Quiet, smooth. That's why I liked it.
I thought they did a great job. I thought it was a fun car to drive, which I think is kind of important besides the cool design.
Yeah, yeah. The hard part about cars at this point is that in a lot of ways as an industry, we sort of discuss them as an afterthought. I know you said you were saving the best for last.
Well, I just didn't want to. I didn't want to give the obvious one last.
But it's sort of, oh, yeah, and the cars.
Well, there's still a big market.
There is still a big market, particularly on the higher end. I think the Genesis product is relevant in that sense.
It's fabulous.
If they're about to relaunch Genesis as a brand, right?
It is.
That's the tough part.
Well, the part, I was talking to the president, and we all know him. He's awesome. And he said the hardest part.
The president of Genesis.
Of Genesis.
Oh, but
Irwin.
This
Irwin.
Month.
Irwin Raphael.
Irwin's been there for a long time. I think the big thing is he's saying his big problem is opening up individual stores. They have to do every state has their own regulations.
Sure.
So some states have already opened standalone stores. Others are still underneath the Hyundai window, which I think hurts them because if you're going to be a premium brand and you want to compete head-to-head with Audi, you better have a standalone store.
As much as we talk about virtual everything, there's no substitute for a sense of place. And luxury is a sense of place, even if you're only there once or twice, and that place ought to be different and better.
And
I know, but, and here's the big but, they're not going to sell these things. I mean, let's get real. As good as that car is, they can't give these Genesis sedans away. And for a dealership to establish a standalone store, wow. Big roll of the dice.
And therefore, as a manufacturer, if you're going to enter luxury today, you've signed up for at least two generations of product that can be great, and you're going to lose money on two generations.
Until you have an SUV, which he says is coming in 2020.
Until you have an established dealer network and an established brand.
So Hyundai's a big corporation. The Korean government will make sure they get the funding they need. How do the dealers stay alive until this full product line comes out?
You would have to subsidize
the
dealers.
You got to subsidize the
dealers.
You would
have to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it depends on where you're located, too. I think a good dealer is smart enough to know that you don't go with old traditional advertising, right? You have to figure out how to get lifestyle media involved, make it an event, make it a special car, do something special, even if that means concierge. I pick it up from your home. There's coffee in the car. Whatever it is, there's always that little something that makes someone go, oh, I feel appreciated.
And special, and I'm not in line at the service drive behind a Veloster.
Right. With some kid.
Right, yeah. with some
kid. So we talk about this on the show fairly regularly, but we have you guys here, so let's ask you. Are sedans dead?
No. Look.
Why do you say that with such fervor?
We can make arguments about when Ford, in an assembly plant, built the first pickup. But, right, because people on farms were already converting the Model Ts to pickups.
Right.
Right? So the pickup has existed for more than 100 years. But let's play it safe and say for 100 years we've had every body style we know today. Right?
Fair.
And only a few have gone away and never come back. The convertible pickup was once predominant, and it went away. And we can make an argument it's the only body style that's gone away permanently. Otherwise, all the other body styles...
There's a convertible pickup truck right behind you here. It's called the Gladiator.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good segue. But my point is, body styles' share of our market moves up and down with demographic changes, with economic changes, with societal changes, with infrastructural change. But we never really have anything go totally away. And I think the argument that we're at the end of cars completely overlooks the luxury market. We're here in L.A. L.A. is a really big market for brands like Mercedes. If you looked at Mercedes-Benz, last year, they probably saw light trucks now sell more than their cars. But brands like BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and Audi are still selling a lot of cars. Now, why did I bring that up? These aren't owners who can't afford a utility vehicle.
They have one as well.
That's right. They're not owners that don't have multiple vehicles, right? And they're not owners who already don't own SUVs. They do. So when you look at an E-Class sale or a 3 Series sale, right, or an A6 or an A8, in every case, that was a buyer who had every capability of buying a utility vehicle instead and chose not to. And that's a choice around style. It's a choice around a total vehicle portfolio, like the Garage Quiver, right? It's a choice around handling. And so what that shows us is people with all the means in the world will have a utility vehicle or even two, right. But really they still always have a passenger car.
Okay,
well,
but
that would be me, because I absolutely
I've
got an Audi RS5, but I also have a Porsche Cayenne.
So do those households in Birmingham, Southeast Michigan, or in Boca Raton, or here in Beverly Hills, really go to a three utility vehicle garage? I don't believe it.
No, you always have a fun car. You have a 911, and then you've got a Land Rover
or an A7.
Jaguar F-Pace.
I just don't believe it.
So John and you, Lauren, both raved about the Toyota Corolla. Now, I understand it's a hatch, not a traditional sedan.
It's fun to drive.
Okay, but does that vehicle have a future? A vehicle like that?
I think there's going to be probably some cutback in some of the other brands. You might agree with that. But I think that the Corolla is like the Focus. You have to have something that hot hatch for those kids, and they're working it. I mean, just like Focus is still there, right? And certain brands, you can't get rid of that.
They're important parts of the portfolio.
Right. You lose that youth market, and whatever it's called. Right now it's millennial, and I think you're hurting yourself.
Well, you know, to Eric's point, body styles don't go away, but they can shrink down to almost nothing.
Yeah, station wagons.
Station wagons in the American market. Convertibles, not a whole lot of them. Coupes, not a whole lot of them either. So sedans, traditional three-box sedans, are never going to go away. But they could still shrink as a segment.
But they can evolve. And I think the really good manufacturers are evolving them. Look what's happened. The rear deck gets shorter and shorter and higher and higher. The back glass gets faster and faster. We increase the second row roominess. At the same time, preserving the cargo area and getting much sleeker profiles. In fact, really, they become very hatch-like in terms of side profile, but they're tremendously exciting products. I mean, A7's old by now.
Yeah, it's brand new. We just drove the new one.
Well, right,
it's
but
fabulous.
Conceptually. But yeah. Living with an A7...
Easy. You can
is
do that.
Easy. Right,
it's a
cavernous opening. You're not making many sedan sacrifices. Right. And I think the manufacturers that are on it are doing that. I think the true three box, mostly being outmoded.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean sedans go away.
No, I agree.
Even like the Hyundai Veloster, which is kind of an anomaly vehicle.
Still a passenger car.
It's still a passenger car, and there's still demand for it. There's no way they would have built a new Veloster if they didn't think they could sell them. Hyundai's not foolish.
Well, no.
You know, there's penny pinchers over there. And they're looking
And
they're going, oh, yeah, we can sell X amount. And so maybe they only plan for 4% of their sales, but they know what's going to sell, and they know exactly what to make.
Look, the key is you got to be able to sell these vehicles around the world.
Yes.
This is how the German luxury brands make it. They can have, 12 to 15 models in their lineup, not a lot of volume in most of them. But they make up the volume on a global basis.
And they have high transaction prices.
That helps a lot.
It helps a lot. Yeah. And it helps with the derivatives. And that's going to be the challenge for a product like Corolla.
Right.
Any of those products have to have multiple body styles.
Yeah.
Right?
Agreed.
You'd have to.
Multiple use of the platforms.
And multiple use of the platform. The question you ask is, when we go up higher in the market, if you get a really lovely platform like Aviator has, do any of us sitting here really think that Lincoln wouldn't do a passenger car off the Aviator platform? I don't find that plausible. Lovely proportions, long dash to axle.
I don't think it's their clientele anymore. I think it's changed so much. They're still selling one or two sedans because they need it. But when you get picked up in a car service, it's an Escalade or a Navigator.
It is, but back to luxury brands. If I've got a platform that's that good, even if my SUV did two-thirds of my volume, it'd be awfully tempting to build a next Continental off the Aviator
platform. Well, especially for the Chinese market, where sedans still resonate.
Yeah, absolutely. Or for the incremental, 20, 30,000 units in North America, and then double that ROW. So I'll put a stake in the glass table. I don't think sedans go away.
Okay, so you mentioned the Aviator. That was a vehicle introduced here at the LA show.
Yeah.
You mentioned Hyundai and the Veloster. They introduced the Palisade, another three-row SUV. Mm-hmm. What have you guys seen at the show that struck you as being significant?
As far as concept or in general?
Anything. Whatever.
God, I really fell in love with that Audi GT concept. That was so sexy. It was just
Audi's doing great design work.
They do amazing design work. And it's funny because I'm watching the designers leave brands like Audi and going to Kia and going to Hyundai, and you're watching that flavor, that personality of that designer go with it, and it's really interesting to watch some of the commonalities.
It's a fairly well-kept secret, but Audi's got a new studio here in Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd stay tuned.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yeah, they've got some good talent over there.
Oh, yeah.
But the concept's great, right?
Beautiful.
Aviator itself, probably the most significant luxury utility vehicle launch from a North American manufacturer in a decade. Right?
I think they got a hit on their hands.
Big jump for Lincoln.
So you're saying
they're dying on the vine?
More than Escalade?
Look, Escalade's important, but Escalade is a large SUV and essentially a Suburban. And that's fine, right? And it has a very important place in the market. But has any American manufacturer had an answer to a Q7 or to a GLE? And the answer's been really no,
mm-mm,
right? Aviator is that. It's really that good, right? Mm-mm. As an analyst, you become sort of a critiquer of every product, right? So at a cocktail party, people go, oh, what do you do? And then they go, oh, what's your favorite product? And what you really want to say is, well, I see the flaws in all of them, right?
But that's the hardest question.
It is.
But
Aviator's the first product for a long time. I thought, you know, if I was really foolish financially, right, which is buying a new luxury vehicle, I would do that.
You'd buy the Aviator.
It's that good.
And I love the Nautilus. I think the Nautilus is... I don't even need for three-row anymore. My kids are out of the house. So everything I'm driving is
right.
Two doors and big engines.
And isn't it nice to see somebody, like, come back?
Yes.
That's cool.
Because Lincoln always had a brand. If you go to, like, Pebble Beach and you see the beautiful vehicles, they kind of lost
they did.
That.
But,
it kind of became like a cracker box.
For,
and
year,
now they're
for
beautiful.
Years, it was poor Kumar.
Yeah.
Right? Who did a great job at peddling, you know, quiet luxury and, you know, black label paint. And now finally there are platforms, and I mean, it's neat to see.
And black label service is cool.
Yeah. I know they only are half at the show in terms of debuts, but I think the Rivian product is exciting too.
I was going to ask you about that.
It's polarizing, but it's exciting.
What makes it polarizing?
So this is an electric pickup truck for those who
and
are...
And an electric SUV off the same
right,
platform
right.
to be built out of the ex-Mitsubishi factory in Normal, Illinois.
Yeah, right.
It's an interesting
it's
story.
To be used.
It was.
So from a design standpoint, what makes it polarizing in your eye?
I mean, look, it's polarizing in the same way the Wrangler behind us is. People either love a Wrangler or hate it. If you're a Jeep, it's okay. I only need $200,000 a year to love it, right?
That's right.
And so we call that a barbell distribution. The people that love it are the ones that I need, and I need them to love it a lot. And if other people hate it, it's fine. I think the Rivian SUT and the Rivian SUV are that way. They're really well proportioned. They're really well surfaced. They're really well thought out. They're big.
In the first half of the show, off air, we learned that they stole a bunch of Jeep designers.
Well, and they're pretty...
That's very smart, actually.
They're pretty blocky, chunky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people are, from what we've seen, people love it or they hate it. If I'm Rivian, that's okay.
What do you think of those sort of oval, vertical headlamps that are integrated with the horizontal
Reminds
ones?
Me of a Ford Flex.
It does. It looks a lot like a Flex, and that's okay. And the SUT looks a lot like a Ridgeline.
Right.
But those are time-tested proportions, right? The oval headlights, I think headlights are very interesting right now. I think you can make an argument that in 10 or 15 years, we don't even need them. We have clients that are already taking LEDs and putting them as arrays behind grills, and you don't even have what we would traditionally call the eyes of the car anymore. We can make them go away now. I think
don't you lose that face?
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
That's the thing in the Japanese market. They want the car smiling at you. You know that better than I do.
Well, and so then to John's point, what we have with the Rivian is that,
yeah,
which is surprise.
But I'll tell you,
it's unique.
From 300 yards away, it stands right out.
You'd know. And that's the polarizing part.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
So, John, what did you see?
Well, I was going to say Rivian. I was very impressed by them. I'm not just impressed by the vehicle, but by the company itself. They're doing a lot of interesting things.
Yeah.
I hope they get all the funding that they need.
Yeah, it's a brave launch.
Clearly, up to now, they've gotten the funding. They're spending the money wisely, so it would seem to me as an outsider. But I don't know. I'll throw it right back in your lap, Gary. What have you seen here?
I the Gladiator.
Yeah,
I think
I
that this is this is the hit of the show. I mean, I just think that these guys have staked their claim on a look, a feel, attributes, capabilities, and you know the design is isn't just a Wrangler with a bed stuck on the back. I mean, that's
no, it isn't.
It's better than that,
right? Yeah. And I just think it's amazing. And it's, to your point, it's just like the people who want it.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of them, they don't care.
It's the right. Where you've been for the last 20 years vehicle,
yeah.
Isn't it?
So I guess this will be running for North American Truck of the Year up against Ranger next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
I think Battle Royale.
See, but I think this
it's
takes
be
some
a big push.
I think this takes some of the air out of the sails of the Ranger. I think the
we
Ranger.
We got Colorado too.
But one of the things, the Ranger's
just hitting the market.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks like the Ranger that they've been building overseas for years, and we've all seen pictures of that. And to Gary's point, the Gladiator comes out, and you go, "Yowza, that's pretty good."
And they've been
also
emphasized.
Polarizing, I think. I think it's a very polarizing vehicle. I would never own anything like that.
Yes.
And I'm a pickup truck owner.
Okay.
So, but it's
okay if it is. Though.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think it's very cool, but I think there's some drawbacks as far as a mass market vehicle, you know, it's for the average person.
But
you're
it's
not
cheap,
see some
it's
mom
cheap
with their
market.
Kids getting in the back with car seats. You know, it's going to be someone who's going, we're doing off-roading.
But maybe it's okay that it doesn't serve the mom with the kids getting in the back seat, and maybe that's part of what differentiates
right.
it, right?
Right?
That used to be a coupe differentiator.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem to be very much of an attraction anymore. But if this isn't a vehicle for the full family, maybe that's okay.
Yeah, well, there's something for everyone.
Okay,
you're off-roading, yeah. For
here's
sure.
Here's another car. Have you guys seen the Mazda 3?
Another polarizing design.
Very polarizing design, but another one that
something.
Really stands
out. They had to do something.
Totally agree. So it's got this.
They've had
very,
a lot of issues internally.
Yes.
And we all know about that as people that work with the
Well, you're especially talking about Mazda in North America.
Yes. But I think this is something they needed. They needed to show this is what we can do.
Design hasn't been one of their issues, though. I mean,
right, they've got great products.
And the Mazda 3's done really well. It's much higher share of segment for Mazda than Mazda would get in other segments. So they've overperformed for two generations with that product. This one's brave, though. The hatchback really pushes it.
Boy, does it ever.
Really
that
pushes
rear,
it.
That rear three-quarter of the vehicle
is brave.
Nobody's
is
doing
brave.
That. Right.
But
sometimes you have to do that.
Beautifully surfaced, yeah.
Right. Sometimes you just got to say, you know what, here it is.
And
this
the sedan, the three box, if you will, is stunning. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what Mazda trades on, right?
It
Mazda's not going to out-utility a brand like Subaru, right? They don't want to position that way with a bunch of greenhouse glass and you know, good visibility, and we carry, you know, dog crates. And if they're zoom, you want your design to reflect that.
As long
and
as it doesn't have Alaska-sized blind spots.
So that's a question. Let me ask you, do you think from a consumer standpoint it communicates that, the hatchback?
I think the three things that I know based on my 30-plus years of work, I know that number one is seating comfort, and number two is visibility.
Okay.
So if I sit in that car, it's never going to get more comfortable the longer I own it. If I get in that vehicle, and especially for women, and I happen to be tall, but someone who's shorter, if they can't see the ground, if they're turning around, they can't see anything but this huge wall of metal, it intimidates some people because they feel that they're going to hit something, even though there's a round view camera and cross traffic alert and all that great safety is good. But no, I think still people don't 100% in their heart go, yeah, I'm going to trust that around view camera, and I'm never going to turn around and look. That's really foolish, actually. That's how you run over something or hit someone.
Let me paint a quick little scenario. I fly to Japan often, which I'm lucky to get to do, but it's for work. And when I first flew to Japan, it was 2000. And in 2000, windows were often open. And the first time I did it, I flew from Detroit Metro to Narita, Tokyo, and you basically fly over the North Pole. And lots of us were looking out the windows at ice cap and that was very common for windows to be open in airplanes.
You mean the window shades?
The shades.
Not the actual window. Sorry, I misspoke.
It would be interesting.
I didn't start flying that long ago.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks ago, I flew to Japan. One passenger once during that day of that flight made the mistake of opening the shade, and the flight attendants hustled right over and asked him to close it because it was disturbing everyone. Now, the reason I bring it up is because as vehicles become autonomous, in other words, as we become passengers, we lose the need to look out.
That would bother me.
But it's happening.
That would bother me.
We have to admit it's happening. And for cars, glass wants to go away.
I will soon have.
Interesting.
I will never get in it.
Lauren will never drive in a
Keep going. Keep going. I want to hear this.
But we've all driven vehicles now without side mirrors, but with video instead. It's better. Right. We can do better rear view than rear view mirrors now.
Well, they have that with Cadillac.
We have blind spot detection. We have lane keep assist. We have great backup cams, mm-hmm. right? I drive a pickup truck with a shell, right, that's often full of camping and surf gear. Mm-hmm. And when I first got that, it bothered me, but the backup cams and the sensors are so good, I don't miss it anymore. Mm. And I think it makes a strong argument that as technology, ADAS, mm-hmm. Advanced Driver Assistance Systems, advance, mm-hmm. glass goes away.
Wow, interesting.
So maybe Mazda's ahead of the curve.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when it comes to ADAS and advanced driver assistance systems, we all buy it. Sales guys are like, oh, man.
We love it.
We've got all this great safety cross-traffic alert. And you buy it. You buy it because, yes, I want the safest on the road because of my family. But if you go back and you look and find people's usage of it, like automatic parking systems.
Yeah, people don't.
They don't use them. They get them to say, oh, my gosh, Gary, get in the car. Watch this thing park itself. Isn't that awesome? And then you never use it again.
Right. But is that true of a bird's eye view camera?
A lot of people don't use them. I can't tell you how many people I've seen get in cars and they do this. They turn around. I'm like, what are you doing? You got a backup camera. But they feel in their heart that they can't trust computers because we all live on these phones and these devices. So I still think there's a disconnect maybe 10 years from now or 20 years from now. That will change. Sure. But I think in today's environment, 90% of people don't even use some of these awesome safety features. They shut them off. First thing I do when I get in a car, and I know you do this too, you shut off the lane change departure. Drives me nuts because I don't want to be constantly bumped in the lane. I can drive.
At 29, you're right on the cusp.
Right.
For those of us over 29, we may still always turn around. But watch a 16, 17, 18-year-old drive.
I've got 229.
You would have to train them hard to make them turn around.
They do, because they don't trust
cameras. I'm nowhere near 29, and I look at the damn screen.
The cameras are better.
The backup cameras are better. They're so good in most cases. So we're getting down to the end of the show. We're getting close to the end of the show. What else has been on the floor here that stood out?
Can I bring something up, which is
you're going to do it anyway.
It's a big risk. I want to bring up the R word, recession.
Uh-huh.
It's not been on the floor. It's not been in the press conferences, but in quiet discussion behind the scenes, a lot of auto maker management is talking about the possibility of recession. I don't think any of us are saying we're in it, but we have to recognize, because when auto shows get together, it's us as an industry coming together. And there's the official talk, and then there's the water cooler talk. And the water cooler talk is, hey, a slowdown's probably coming.
Yeah.
But really, the R word, there's a lot of talk of, hey, we peaked probably. How are we preparing? We're not in it yet. What's it going to look like?
Wouldn't it?
It would.
You're smart enough to say, you know what?
Recessions aren't good business, but...
Well, I'm saying it's smart enough to plan ahead.
But being aware that they could come, yes.
Well, you know, we heard the bombshell from General Motors this week that they're going to close five plants, to lay off 15,000 people. Why do you say horrible timing?
Well, let's just do it right in front of the LA Auto Show when everyone's got these great products we're bringing out. Oh, by the way, let me just put a big old wet blanket on it and say we're going to have all these people out of jobs, and then we're going to eliminate all the cars. Why, they're sitting over here on the show floor. Now, forget that in Palo. You know that one that's sitting out there? Just ignore it. I mean,
at least it took the heat off Ford for making their announcement that they were going to drop cars.
You know, it's funny. When Ford made their announcement, GM put out an announcement. We're still going to make cars. That was 7 months ago.
Yeah.
And then now they got egg on their face. Oh, yeah. Us too. You know, it was like, you're a little behind. It was a bad timing, and I think it looks like a bold move on Mary Barra's part, but I think she's got a lot of pressure from the board saying, what's next? What are you going to do? You're not selling these Chevy Cruisers. You're not selling Impalas.
Yeah, you're losing money on all these plants.
Why are we not planning this in advance? Why do we not have someone looking ahead 60 months saying, we're not going to sell these things forever. What are we going to do?
So what's your prediction? Are we going to be in a recession? Or let's just look at it this way.
That's a hard question.
Car sales 17, what?
17.4 this year,
okay.
Probably.
Is it peak car?
I don't believe in peak car, because car long-term tracks population.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so all those long-term predictions of peak car have never come true. But do we have cycles? Yes. Are we probably about to enter one? Yes. And partly we're all to blame because we pull sales ahead.
Right.
And incentives have been high. Fleet has been high. No one wants to go from three shifts to two or from two shifts to one.
Because then you get heat from And so, federal government.
So inventory piles up. So yeah,
but car sales are not going to go down just because car sales have been so strong for so long. They're going to go down when the economy slows.
It's correlated. You're right.
And it's showing no signs right now. We have record low unemployment.
Agreed.
We have record high, or very high, I should say, consumer confidence. Yep. And getting to your point, which is a really good one, Eric, population growth. Every year, the population of the United States grows by nearly 2.5 million. There are now 48 million more people living in the United States than there were in the year 2000. Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
And they're not going to ride streetcars.
And they're not going to do that.
Well, the mass transit couldn't support it.
No room in San Francisco anyway.
Yeah, that's right. There's no parking in San Francisco. That's it. Yeah.
Hey, look, we're going to have to wrap this up. I would love to invite you guys back on the show another time so we can dive more into this. But you've been terrific guests. It's really a pleasure to have the both of you here.
Thanks
for having us.
And, Gary, I love doing this show with you, and we're going to keep on doing it.
Yeah, and thanks for keeping us honest on the numbers, Gary.
Of course, only John figured it out.
Lucky guess.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.